Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. As you know, Rabbi Schweiger teaches most of the podcasts in the series. Rabbi Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes, but he does far more than teach. In addition to his courses, Rabbi Schweiger plans and leads the Pardes Tiulim, multi-day trips across Israel for the students. He also organizes the Pardes Fellows Program, and serves as a moral guide for the institution in his role as a Mashkiach Ruchani. For all this and much more, Pardes will be honoring Rabbi Meir Schweiger for his 30 years of dedicated service to Pardes. I invite you to take a few minutes to write some words of greeting or appreciation to Rabbi Schweiger. What have been some of the places or circumstances where you've learned from him via the podcast? How have the podcast changed you? Send your thoughts to Pardes staff member Karen Fuhrer via Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at pardes.org.il. Thank you. Your comments will be added to a book of appreciation that will be presented to Rabbi Schweiger in December. The address is also on the notes for this podcast, available on your iPod or computer. A second announcement is that Pardes faculty members Yaffa Epstein and Leah Rosenthal will be teaching at the Limud New York Conference this coming January. But you should sign up now since the conference tends to sell out. Limud New York is a superb conference. Check it out for all the details via www.limudnewyork.org. That's LIMMUDNY.org. This week, Rabbi Schweiger teaches Vayera. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes, and as you know, he also serves as a Mashgiach Ruchani for the institution. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Vayera. Today I would like to examine the personality of Lot and his relationship to the city of stone. The first time that we meet Lot is at the end of Parshat Noach. In chapter 11, verse 26, we are told of the death of Lot's father, Haran, in the land of his birthplace in Ur Kasdim. A few verses later, in verse 31, we are told of Terach, who decides to leave Ur Kasdim to go to the land of Canaan and takes with him Avram, Sarai, and Lot. At face value, one could say that in the aftermath of the tragic, premature death of Lot's father, Terach tries to bring the family closer together, to go away from that area, to start a new life. Lot is brought under the aegis of his grandfather. But Terach does not complete his journey. When they come to the area of Haran, Terach decides to remain there, to settle down there. And is there where God says to Avram, Lech Lecha. And we are told in chapter 12, verse 5, verse 4, that Avram goes as God commanded him to do, God told him to do. And Lot goes with him. It is interesting that Lot decided to leave Terach and to go with Avram. If earlier Terach, his grandfather, was his mentor, now Avram becomes his mentor, protector. But then we come to chapter 13, and this perhaps is where we see how they begin to part ways. In chapter 13, verse 2, we're told that after Avraham went down to the land of Egypt and is eventually deported from the land of Egypt, goes back to the land of Canaan, he emerges from Egypt as a very heavy individual, heavy in the sense of prestigious, heavy in the sense of wealthy. He is heavy in herds, in silver, in gold. The image you have is Avraham is somebody who is a very successful businessman. And then in verse 5, chapter 13, we're told, and also Lot, who goes with Avram, has sheep and cattle and tents. On the one hand, the Torah describes Lot as being connected to Avram, the one who goes with Avram. But on the other hand, Lot is now being set up, being presented as an independent character, parallel to Avram, but in a different league. Avram is a heavyweight. He has silver, gold. Lot has no silver, no gold. Avram has herds, mikneh. He raises cattle for commercial purposes. Lot has sheep and cattle. It's not mikneh. It's not on the same scale. And then in verse 7, we're told there is this dispute between the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot. The simple reading of the text is that based on verse 6, they have a lot of possessions. The land is not able to bear them. There's not enough grazing area, which leads to a dispute between them. At which point Avram suggests to Lot, let us separate. And Lot, in verse 10, lifts up his eyes, and he sees the Jordan Valley, that it was all watered. Before God destroyed Sodom and Amorah, it was like the garden of God, like the land of Egypt, as you go to Tzoar. And in verse 11, Lot chose to himself the whole Jordan Valley. He journeyed from the east, and they separated a man from his brother. Let us note a number of points that emerge from this. Lot lifts up his eyes. This is an expression that we find a number of times, and especially in our parsha, in the beginning of the parsha, at the end of the parsha, Avraham lifts up his eyes. Lifting up one's eyes is very much associated with a revelation, divine revelation. What is Lot's divine revelation here? The Jordan Valley is watered. It is like the garden of God, like the land of Egypt. Rashi comments, like the garden of God in terms of fruits, like the land of Egypt in terms of seeds. Sodom is a very fertile area. What Lot sees in Sodom is an unbelievable opportunity for economic growth, to accumulate wealth. This is what attracts him to Sodom. He chooses the Jordan Valley because of its lushness. Let me read one more verse. In verse 13, at the end of verse 12, it says, and Lot settled down in the cities of the valley, and he pitches his tent until Sodom. And in verse 13, and this is my translation, but the people of Sodom were evil and sinful exceedingly to God. It is interesting that Lot sees that this place is watered, the greenery, the economic potential. What Lot doesn't see, or perhaps doesn't want to see, is the evil of the people of Sodom. They are evil, sinful, exceedingly to God. The text emphasizes this point. This is an objective reality, and yet somehow Lot is oblivious to it. If I go back for a second to verse 10, Lot sees the lush area before God destroyed it. And perhaps the text is hinting that Lot is not able to see the imminent doom which will come upon the people of Sodom. His vision is very, very limited. He is short-sighted. The image which I see from this is of someone who would like to become his own person, and especially to carve out his niche in terms of wealth, status, power. It is very interesting that the rabbis note in verse 11 when it says, and Lot departed, Mikedem, from the east. This presents a certain problem geographically because Lot perhaps is to the west of the area of Sodom. And therefore you have a rabbinic comment, which Rashi quotes, which says that Lot is basically now parting from the ancient one of the world. Lot, in fact, is now breaking with Avram and what he represents. Avram, the one who calls out in the name of God. Avram, the man of spirit. Perhaps we could explain this psychologically. That Lot feels he can never really become a spiritual giant like Avram, but he can become his peer in wealth. And this is how he will make his mark. When Avram offers Lot, let us separate. Avram is interested in giving Lot space, as we would say nowadays. He's not interested in breaking with Lot. Lot is very precious to Avram. How do I know this? This becomes clear in the next chapter, chapter 14. In chapter 14, there is a long story about battles between four kings and five kings. The point which interests me now is in this whole long story, Lot is taken captive in the defeat of the kings of Sodom, the kingdom of Sodom. This is chapter 14, verse 12. Vayikhu et Lot ve'et rechusho Benachi Avram, Vayelechu, Vuhu Yoshe Bistom. The syntax of this verse is very strange. If I were to translate it literally, and they took Lot and his wealth, the nephew of Avram. Who is the nephew of Avram, Lot or his wealth? Or I should say his possessions. And therefore, the way that I understand this strange syntax is that the Torah is trying to say that Lot's possessions have come between him and his being identified as the nephew of Avram. It creates a wedge between him and Avram. And at the very end of the verse it says, and he was settled in stone. This is a kind of afterthought. And Rashi comments, what is the import of that statement? To tell us that what caused Lot to be taken into captivity, his living in stone. And then in the succeeding verses in chapter 14, someone tells Avram that his brother has been taken as a captive. And then Avram engages in a battle to free his nephew, to free the people of Sodom from their captors. And we're told in verse 16, Avram restored all the property, and also Lot his brother and his property he restored, and the women and the people. And what is Lot's response to this? What is Lot's response to the fact that Avram has endangered his life, waged war in order to save his brother, his nephew, the Avram who told him, let us separate, where the separation was not meant to be a break in their relationship? Lot's response is silence. He does not express his gratitude, his thanks. He certainly does not go back to Avram. The next picture we have of Lot is in our parsha, in chapter 19. Where Lot is even more entrenched in the society of stone. Chapter 14 is a very significant chapter, and I only want to point out one point which is relevant to the personality of Lot. The defeat of the people of stone should have been an alarm, a warning to Lot, a wake-up call. What are you doing in stone? This will ultimately bring about your destruction. Maybe you should go back to Avram. How much more so when he's saved by Avram? This is where you belong. Go back. But Lot seems to be totally oblivious to that signal. And so we read in chapter 19, in our parsha, that this is chapter 19, verse 1. And the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting at the gate of Sodom. And when he saw them, he arose to greet them. He prostrated himself on the ground. The rabbis comment, what is Lot doing at the gate of stone? And based on other references we see in the Tanakh, they say that on that day Lot was appointed to be a judge, which would mean for us that Lot has now become an upstanding citizen, perhaps a major player in the city of stone. At the very least, he is very much part of that framework. Note the fact that when he sees these angels in verse 2, he says, behold my masters, turn aside to the house of your servant, lodge, wash your feet, get up early to go on your way. And they replied, no, for we shall spend the night in the street. These verses beg a comparison and a contrast to the beginning of the parsha, which speaks of Avram's hospitality. How are they similar? In the same way that Avram goes out to greet strangers and invites them into his home to provide for them, Lot too does that. In the same way that Avram bows down, calls them his masters, Lot too does that. But there are a few subtle differences. In chapter 18, again and again we are told of how Avram is running, how he is rushing. In our verse, it says, when Lot saw the men, he arose, vayakom, which implies a certain difficulty, where he has to somehow overcome himself to do this. He is not rushing. When he invites them to come to his house, he says, turn aside. And Rashi quotes a rabbinic comment which says, come to my house, but do it in a convoluted way, because I don't want anybody to notice you, because the people of Sodom are not receptive to inviting guests to their homes. Even more so, if they know that Lot has invited them. That could be very dangerous. He says to the people, spend the night and then wash your feet. As opposed to Avram, who says to his guests, the first thing you should do is wash your feet. And everyone who has been on a hike, who's been traveling, knows that the first thing that you want to do is to take a shower, take a bath, refresh yourself. But Lot doesn't want to offer them that possibility. He wants to get them out of the way so that nobody will see them. And perhaps the most striking contrast is the response of the angels. When Avram invites them to come to his home, they say to Avram, do whatever you say. We will follow you. With Lot, they say, no, we will sleep in the street. To Lot's credit, in verse 3, he pleads with them exceedingly. And eventually they accede to his request. To Lot's credit, he clearly has learned the meaning of hospitality from Avram, but he does not extend it in the same manner. Is it because he is not the same caliber of person of Avram? Or is it because his environment doesn't allow him to do so? Or perhaps a combination thereof? And when they finally come to his house, he makes a party for them, or in the language of the Torah, mishteh, which is always associated with drinking, and he bakes matzot. Very strange. Matzot is not necessarily seen as being a royal feast. But if I take the two together, Lot gives them to drink liquor. He gives them matzah. Perhaps Lot wants to knock them out, get them out of the way, so that nobody is able to notice them. Let them fall asleep. Get their meal over as quickly as possible. In sharp contrast with Avraham, who offers them meat and milk, who tells them, feast to your heart's delight. In sharp contrast to Avram, who is waiting upon them. And in sharp contrast to Avram, who involves the members of his household, where in our story it is only Lot. And then we all of a sudden encounter the people of Sodom, who earlier in Parshat Lech Lecha were described as being evil and sinful to God exceedingly. And perhaps now we see them in verse 4. Before they lay down to sleep, the men of Sodom, this men of the city, the men of Sodom, surrounded the house from young to old, the people all around. And they called out to Lot and said to him, where are the men that came to you this evening? Take them out to us, so that we may get to know them. Getting to know them is a euphemism for sexuality, and in this case, for sexual abuse. Note the fact, who is involved in this? All the people, all the men of the city, from young to old. This is not a peripheral element. Across the board, everyone is involved in this perversion. The rabbis understand that what is going on now is not just a group of people who have, perhaps we would say, sexual fantasies, who want to play them out on the men in his house, but who consciously want to use the sexual act, the act which is described as knowing, as intimacy, in an extremely abusive way, to get the message across, Sodom is not a place to seek hospitality. Now we'll come back to this later. And then we come to the climax of the story. And Lot went out to the men of the city by the entrance. He closed the door behind him. And in verse 7, he said, my brothers, do not act in an evil manner. Behold, I have two daughters who have not known a man. I will take them out to you, and you will do to them that which is good in your eyes. But just do not do anything to these men who have come in the shelter of my house. And they said, move aside. And they said, the one who came to sojourn among us has now become a judge. We will do worse to you than to them. And they pressed Lot, the man, exceedingly, and they approached to break down the door. On the one hand, when we read this conversation, we get an image of Lot, who is prepared to do anything to save his guests, who will under no circumstances allow them to be abused. And people have argued that to this very day, this is a Middle Eastern practice of somehow seeing that guests who come to your house are now under your protection, your shelter. I would argue that this is something which Lot picked up from Avraham. But let's look at the other side of the picture. Lot calls the people of Sodom my brothers, And although one could argue this is a tactic, to be able to somehow pull them in, to listen to what he has to say to them, it is very interesting that he never says this to Avram. Avram calls Lot his brother in chapter 13. The text says in chapter 14 that Avram went out to save his brother, but Lot does not relate to Avram as his brother. Lot calls the people of Sodom my brothers. Perhaps this is not just a tactic, but on some level this is how Lot sees himself. He is part of the city of Sodom. And then Lot says to them, do not act evilly. Lot is making a value judgment. He is telling them what you want to do is evil. Once again, to his credit, he calls a spade for a spade. And yet the same man who says that what you're about to do to the guests is evil says, take my daughters and do whatever is good in your sight. But how could you trust their judgment, especially with your daughters? And the rabbis say it is the nature of the world that a man will do everything to protect his daughters, protect them from abuse. And here is Lot who is handing his daughters over to the people of Sodom on a silver platter. And the final thing that we see is Lot, who according to the rabbis was appointed a judge in the city of Sodom, is perhaps laughed at by the people who say to him, who are you to judge us? You have come to sojourn. Sojourn meaning to be a temporary dweller among us. Who are you to now feel so at home, so comfortable, so much part of our framework that you make a judgment of us? We will do worse to you than to them. What I've tried to show is how Lot parted ways with Avram and where this brought him. How ultimately he sees his destiny being with the people of Sodom, not with Avram. They are his brothers, not Avram. What is it that pulls him so much to Sodom? The money, the wealth, the economics. Lot is a person torn between two worlds, the spiritual and the material, and he opts to become part of that material world, which ultimately brings about his demise. The very end of chapter 19 is the ultimate downfall of Lot, when he is given to drink by his daughters, has sexual relations with them, and eventually bears two nations, Ammon and Moab. I would like to end with a comment from Pirkei Avot, which I think is true of Lot, or relevant to Lot, and also relevant to the people of Sodom. In Pirkei Avot, Ethics of the Fathers, chapter 5, Mishnah 10, it says there are four types of people. One who says what is mine, and what is yours, this is an average person. And some say this is the nature of the people of Sodom. One who says what is mine is yours, what is yours, that is a righteous person. One who says, what is yours is mine, what is mine, is an evil person. One who says, what is mine, and what is yours, is a fool. And what I began reading with, one who says, what is mine, and what is yours, that's an average person. But some say, that is the nature of the people of Sodom. Lot is an average person. An average person who is looking to make his fortune. But average people can become horrible people. Average people can say and perhaps do things that are totally unacceptable. By extrapolation, I would also like to say, Sodom, which is described, the men of Sodom who are described as being evil, sinful, to God exceedingly, were not necessarily evil monsters by their nature. It could very well be that they were average people who said, what is mine, what is yours, who were reasonable, logical people, but people who in the end were not prepared to give of themselves, did not have a sense of what chesed is all about. And perhaps the story of Sodom and the story of Lot are stories of people, average people, who degenerate to become monsters, who in their pursuit of wealth become blinded, completely lose their sense of judgment, and end up saying and doing things that are outrageous, and perhaps even justifying it, explaining it. When we see situations of people who act in a horrific manner, it is very easy to write them off and to distance oneself and to say they are monsters. It is much more difficult to do that when you know that they're just average people, because then it means you could potentially become that type of monster. What the Mishnah tells us, and perhaps what the Torah is showing us, when it contrasts Avram and Lot, is saying that you can't be an average person. You need to strive for righteousness. You can't just go by what seems to be reasonable. What is mine, what is yours, you need to have chesed. You need to go above and beyond. Without chesed, without the pursuit of righteousness, one can degenerate and become a sodomite. One can take the blessing of God, as the Torah describes stone, the place which is like the garden of God, like the land of Egypt. And the rabbis really play this up in Masechet Sanhedrin. Stone was exceedingly blessed in its affluence, in its abundance. Lot is very blessed in his resources. But instead of each of them using all of their resources to give to others, to create a better world, instead of acknowledging that everything which they have is the gift of God, they ultimately use their resources to bring about their own destruction. We are now in the midst of a major economic crisis. The economic crisis did not happen like that. It was the result of greedy people, people who wanted to make a lot of money, perhaps at the expense of others, who in the end brought about their own ruin and perhaps the ruin of many societies. Human nature has not radically changed, but also the model and the standards exist today as they did then. We can operate by a different standard. We can change our reality. We need to learn that money is not an end, but a means to bring blessing into the world, a way to serve God, a way to help others. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. So send your thoughts to podcasts@pardesusa.org. And as I mentioned, your comments for Rabbi Schweiger's Book of Appreciation will be most appreciated. Send them to Karen Furr via Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at pardes.org.il. Thank you very much.